Stained Glass Radio on North Sound 2, 1035, and digital radio. Well, an uneasy ceasefire hangs over Israel and the Gaza Strip since Israel mounted Operation Pillar of Defence from the 14th to 21st November to try to stop the barrage of rockets from the Gaza Strip aimed at its towns and cities. But as frequently happens when Israel is forced to take action to defend its citizens, the media in this country and abroad are very quick to criticise its response as disproportionate or to give airtime to the terrorists themselves and their families, who are quick to accuse Israel of being the aggressor. This all leads to confusion in the mind of many viewers and listeners as to what the true story is regarding the Middle East conflict. One website that works to set the record straight is wildolive.co.uk, and we're very pleased to have on the line tonight to speak to us Michael Beer, creator of the Wild Olive website. Michael, welcome to Stained Glass Radio.
Thank you very much.
Michael, tell us a little about how Wild Olive got started. Where did the idea come from?
Okay. Well, I need to sketch in the background, I suppose. I was born a year before Israel, and I was born again a year before Jerusalem.
Okay.
That we captured. I remember our pastor saying at the time of the Six-Day War that this is significant prophetically. But then nothing much happened about Israel, didn't hear anything more about it, it was hardly mentioned. And then in 1998, which was the Jubilee year for Israel, I went to Jerusalem for a prayer conference with a lady called Christine Dalg. And there I realised how much of our faith is Jewish, particularly this was Passover time. And I found out, you know, that the bread and the wine is actually part of the Passover meal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really hooked. I started reading. I came home and bought a copy of Christ in the Feasts of Israel and a Messianic Passover meal guide. And I was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had one of these God incidences. A couple of years later, I was at one of the feasts run by the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. And they said, you've had a great time, but now go home and share with people what you've learned. And at the same time, I was working as a technician in a sixth form college. And they said, can you teach the youngsters how to do websites, which I'd never done before. And I think it was my wife sort of alerted me to a book that had come out called Cybernauts Awake. And it was for Christians, telling them, rather than complaining about all the bad stuff on the internet, go and put some good stuff on. So that was it, really.
I decided
to build this website, learn how to do it, using the material I'd been picking up about Israel.
Well, that's tremendous. I mean, really a God incidence there. You got the prompt to learn how to put a website together just when it was needed for this sort of thing. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
You make the point, Michael, on Wild Olive, that the church today has strayed from its Jewish heritage. And you mentioned there that you learned a lot about it when you were first out in Israel, and that's what impressed you so much. In what ways has the church strayed from its Jewish heritage, and why is it important for it to rediscover it, would you say?
Okay. Well, first off, the Bible is a Jewish book, which I think is largely overlooked. All the writers, with the possible exception of Luke, were actually Jews. So they had Jewish Hebrew ways of thinking. I mean, all through the New Testament even. And the church seemed to have forgotten what it owed the Jews. And you know, whereas the Jews in first century times started persecuting the believers, once the believers had enough power, they started persecuting the Jews, and it sort of carried on. And the church overlooked what Paul taught about the Jewish rejection of Jesus actually being for our benefit. You know, it comes up in Romans 11.
Yeah.
And really that led to all sorts of bad stuff. And one of the things that happened was that Greek philosophy sort of came in. And Greek philosophy and Hebrew thinking are completely different. And whereas the Hebrew philosophy or Hebrew thinking that Jesus was brought up in, obviously, doesn't draw a distinction between body and spirit, and no, your life is all of a oneness. The church started looking at the body as being sinful, and you know, we need to sort of escape from the body to the spiritual realm. So our understanding of a lot of things is hampered if we've sort of lost touch with the Hebrew way of looking at things.
Yes, of course, and we've got this thing as well called replacement theology, haven't we, which the church has adopted. And in an attempt to explain the passages in the Bible where it refers to Israel, very often the church will insert itself in there and say, well, whenever it says Israel, it means the church. And of course, you get a very strange Bible if you do that, but it doesn't seem to stop them doing so.
Absolutely.
The festivals, Michael, you mentioned the festivals earlier on. Jewish people today still celebrate the old Jewish festivals like Hanukkah, Purim, Tabernacles, Yom Kippur, etc. You say these festivals are important days for Christians too. Why do you say that?
Right. Well, I think the first thing I'd have to say is a health warning. You know, I don't say to Christians that you should give up the Christian holidays, and I don't want to get into calling for a legalistic observance of the Jewish holidays, because I know Paul had trouble with people following him around. And no, he said to the Colossians, don't let anyone pass judgment on you in regard to Jewish festivals. But there is a lot in these feasts, and I believe we should see what God has for us in them. And there are seven main feasts, which are in three groups. And they're Passover in the spring, Pentecost 40 days later, and then Tabernacles in the autumn. And we're fairly, relatively familiar with Passover and Pentecost, but not so with Tabernacles. And when you get the sort of Messianic Jewish understanding of things, Passover and the first three of the seven feasts all point towards what Jesus did, he actually died at Passover, and he was resurrected on the first fruits feast on the Sunday, which I think is amazing. You know, it's the first fruit of them that sleep, first to rise from the dead. And the Pentecost was partly an agricultural feast, and partly it was a celebrating the giving of the law, the Torah. And on the day when they were celebrating the giving of the Torah was when the Holy Spirit was sent, which was the upgraded step in God's plans, really.
Yes.
But Tabernacles is the sort of autumn celebration of harvest. It's a celebration of the God's care for the people of Israel as they wandered in the wilderness and before he brought them into their home. And it's, generally speaking, ingathering, which is... it's not fulfilled yet prophetically, but prophetically it's the ingathering at the end of the age. So, you know, there's sort of wonderful rejoicing then. And one of the feasts there is Simchat Torah, which is the celebrated at the end of Tabernacles, which is rejoicing in the Torah. And I've been in Jerusalem and Haifa when they've been celebrating, and in Haifa there was just a crowd of people on a shopping mall, and they were playing music and dancing around with the Torah scrolls, and I got invited in, which was fantastic. But the challenging bit really is that these feasts are actually called the Moedim. They're God's appointed times, and he commanded them for all time for his people. And of course, we're grafted into God's people. We're not some new separate thing. And God never commanded us to celebrate Christmas or Easter, and certainly Jesus wasn't born on the 25th of December.
No, no.
So, why would we sort of reject the feast that God instituted and then devise our own?
Yes, it does seem a bit illogical. And these things, I mean, even if people don't actually get to the point of celebrating them, there's so much that people can learn just from looking into these things and studying them and seeing the way that they point to Jesus and his life. Michael, what's the main aim of your website? What are you mainly trying to do with it?
Mainly, it is to share what I've been learning and to share the bits that so many people are cheated of. Mm-hmm. But as you obviously noted in your introduction, a lot of it comes back to what's going on now in Israel and sort of standing up for Israel against all the criticism.
Yes. And the name Wild Olive, that comes from what Paul said, does it?
Yes, it's Romans 11:17, yeah. Where he said, no, he was explaining to the Gentile believers that, you know, don't forget that you are, no, you're not some new thing that's infinitely superior to the Jews. You've mm-hmm. actually been grafted into God's olive tree.
Now, the Bible talks about one new man, doesn't it?
Yes.
Some people, when they look at your website, Michael, will say, it's very pro-Israel, or there's not much there about the plight of these poor Palestinian people. And when I looked at the site, it does seem to be overwhelmingly supportive of the Jewish state. What would you say to someone who suggests that the site is one-sided?
Yes, I suppose. Yes, it is. Obviously, if you read it, it is very pro-Israel. But what I would say is that if you believe that there are unbiased sources, I think you're misled. it just reminded me of Mark Twain's comment that if you don't read a newspaper, you're uninformed, but if you do read a newspaper, you're misinformed.
Yes.
And I think people, Christians particularly, need to be aware that there aren't unbiased sources. Everybody has their agenda. Say even the BBC. I mean, the BBC is a bit of a bête noire for Israel's supporters, but they've had to make efforts. But they, a while ago, because of all the pressure, the complaints about bias against Israel, they commissioned the Balin report.
Yes, I was going to say that.
And apparently, since then, there are different estimates, but. They've spent either $200,000 or $330,000 of licensed payers' money.
An awful amount of money stop people finding out.
Yes. So you must imagine, even though we can't see the details, that it must have told them that they were biased against Israel.
Well, anybody who watches the BBC knows full well which side they're rooting for in any conflict. I mean, even in the most recent one, where the Israelis were about to enter Gaza, they were waiting on the border to see if the barrage would stop. The BBC had, I think it was, 2 correspondents in Israel and 12 in Gaza. You know, I mean, you can see this happening, and they stand in Gaza and wring their hands and say, you know, look at these poor people, what these poor people are suffering. But they don't, all the rocket fire which goes into Israel leading up to that is forgotten.
Yeah.
And the things that the Jewish people have to suffer through being surrounded by enemies are totally forgotten. That's just one example of media bias that we have. I mean, it's not just the BBC. It comes from other areas as well. What are some of the other kinds of things that you see that you take a stand against yourself, Michael?
When you say take a stand, I think, you know, while Olive is just a tiny voice, you know, attempting to redress the balance a bit, and particularly that Christians should form their worldview from the Bible, not from television. But I sort of get upset by things in newspapers and anything in everyday life, really. If you're looking at things critically, you know, you can see when somebody's peddling an anti-Israel line.
Mm-hmm. But, what do you think it is that makes the media in this country do that? Is it anti-Semitism, do you think?
Well, I would tend to say that's the bottom line, but I know anti-Semitism isn't socially acceptable these days. No, nobody would, very few people would admit to being anti-Semitic. But being anti-Israel is quite socially acceptable, you know, in the chattering classes and academia and so on. So I think, and also, the being anti-Israel fits a sort of a soft socialist leftish viewpoint, mm-hmm. where the colonial powers are bad and the little people standing up are good.
Yes.
And Israel is painted, you know, because they've been successful, whereas one time they were sort of David against the Arabs Goliath. The Palestinian narrative has turned that around so that Israel is now Goliath. And that fits. You have this sort of connection, really, between the leftish people, the socialist people, and leftish parts of the church, where liberation theology and replacement theology all fit together quite nicely.
Hamas and Fatah regard the media very much as one of the biggest weapons in their armoury. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
On Stained Glass Radio in the past, Michael, we talked about how some of the mainstream churches are very anti-Israel, and we mentioned this earlier on, replacement theology. However, what people don't realise is that this anti-Israel sentiment also affects some of our best-known Christian charities too. And you bring this out in your site. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yes, I suppose I'd give a health warning like I did earlier, that what I don't want to do is take on the charities and damage the work of charities. But I strongly feel that Christians, like other things, they should form their worldview from the Bible and not what charities tell them. And sadly, I think there are many charities that have come from the leftish socialist viewpoint and have brought into all this stuff and replacement theology, liberation theology and stuff. And I hesitate to mention Christian Aid, but I'm looking at the past as an example, but a few years ago, they had a magazine coming out for Christmas time, and I actually sort of went through and looked at it page by page, and there were many, many references to Israel, but it was all pushing the Palestinian line. And I thought the horrible thing about it was that they were really offering churches, you know, formats for Christmas Day services, and they were actually replacing Jesus born in Bethlehem with a little girl who lived in Bethlehem and had lost an eye as a collateral damage in a firefight between Palestinians and Israelis. And I think a charity, well, any charity, shouldn't be pushing a political agenda anyway, mm-hmm. and particularly a charity that calls itself Christian shouldn't be pushing a view that, to my mind, is anti what the Bible says.
Well, I became worried about it myself when I read in one of their magazines that I used to get. They stopped sending me their magazines after I wrote a letter to them complaining. So I think I'm not sure whether I'll hear from them again, but I did object to one of the things that they're doing. They are apparently using charity money to send what they call observers to Israel to watch the Israeli soldiers at the checkpoints as they admit Palestinians into Israel. And these people just sit and watch the Israeli soldiers to see that they don't infringe the Palestinians' human rights. There's a total loss of seeing the other side of it here. These soldiers are at risk of their own lives.
Yeah.
They're at risk of attack. Many of them have been attacked by people coming through the checkpoints. They have to be so careful. And at the same time, they now have a Christian Aid volunteer sitting watching them. What's that going to do for Jewish-Christian relations? Not very much, I would have thought. Michael, your site is excellent. It's absolutely full of information. It not only combats disinformation about Israel and the Jewish people, as we've said, but it's full of links to many other useful sites doing similar things. What are some of the sites that you would recommend our listeners to have a look at?
Yes, I'd like to quote Isaac Newton, if I may, and he said, "If I've been able to see further, it was only because I stood on the shoulders of giants." And Wild Olive really is, I'm glad that people find it useful, and you know, there's explanations of a lot of things, but everything that's on there is just really an introduction. And I've linked to books and websites that I've got my information from, and I would hope that people would go on to them. So you know, there's a big page of internet links, and it's a bit difficult to pick out particular ones. Certainly the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, ICJ, is always good. And there's Ma'oz Israel, which is a messianic fellowship that, I mean, it spreads much wider. They've got Arab people as well. Palestinian Media Watch is brilliant. You can see on their site all the stuff that the Palestinian Authority is putting out, all the indoctrination to their children. And
yeah, I've seen that site. It's quite an eye-opener, isn't it?
Yes. And then you've got things like BBC Watch, monitoring what the BBC is saying. UN Watch, which is monitoring how anti-Israel the UN is. And Honest Reporting. Then you've got things like the Temple Institute. You can learn a lot from that about because they're getting ready for when they get to build the new temple.
Yes.
There's Hebrew for Christians, which is a very interesting website. You know, it's it would be lovely to be able to know Hebrew, and I've tried and failed to learn it, but this guy gives a lot of help and draws out fascinating stuff for the Christian.
Well, as we said, there's a wealth of information on there for anybody who's interested, and it's well worth a visit. Michael Beer, creator of wildolive.co.uk, it's an amazing site. It sets the record straight for anyone who wants to get at the truth about events in the Middle East and find out more about the nation of Israel. Thank you very much for joining us tonight on Stained Glass Radio. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much.